Okay, it's time to pick up on week 7, which starts the second half of the course, analysis of durations, time to event data, analysis of behavior streams, all under a general statistical rubric of survival analysis. So as usual, our lecture 7 content is in the file 20lect7.pdf, which looks like it's 121 pages, but some of that is ancillary material just in there for background. So we should have a full day, but not an overflow day. And we will, for the rest of the course, pursue these various topics. So page 1 of the PDF is just the front page of our webpage, highlighting week 7 and some of the general resources we'll be pulling from, in addition to a large collection listed in week 7. So we have the Singer and Willett text, which is half growth curves, half survival analysis, because he was my handbook of statistical analysis using our second or third edition, which have a survival analysis chapter, glioma, which is bad stuff in the brain. So that'll be an example to look at. Also then a number of survival analysis texts, page 2 of the PDF, items 10 through 13, Rupert Miller's legacy monograph, which goes through the AML leukemia example. A nice book, EHA, by sociologist Brostrom, who does a lot of good stuff, and we use the EHA package a little bit to illustrate. And then Cloudfish and Prentice, which is a classic survival analysis book. Klein and Mosbacher has lots of good data examples, which are available in R. So highlighted is a book by David Cox, creator of Cox Regression, Proportional Hazards. And this is a more general book on series of events, behavior streams, on-off behaviors, recurrent events, which we'll look at weeks 8 or week 9. Also, I'll do a partial posting of the course problem set this week after lecture, and that'll have problems on weeks 1 through 5 or 1 through 6. We'll see, to get you started, because we're about 4 weeks out. So to week 7, page 3 of the PDF gives us a web page for week 7, Introduction to Survival Analysis, which is also called Event History Analysis, and Social Science applications. We have a number of items. This is probably more than we need, but it's good to have redundancy. Some non-technical expositions may be better for some people, some more technical may be more familiar to others, depending on your background and how much you've seen this stuff before. Some have seen it not at all, because people look at measured outcomes a lot and not enough at durations. So we have an in-the-news item for life tables with local hero Mark Feldman, population biology, and we'll look at that next week because it requires us to learn a little bit before we can see that paper, but you can see people are still doing these sorts of items. How long do you live? And what does it depend on? Okay, then we have a number of source documents for our introduction and pursuit of survival analysis methods. John Fox, a sociologist up at McMaster and major figure in R, written a number of texts that are very good. He has an appendix or a tutorial that we'll use, and that has the recidivism data also in it. And so that's one very good introduction, 5-6 pages of core definitions and models. Rupert Miller's Stanford Tech Report, which was his biostat course on survival analysis, that has the leukemia data. There's a nice Cox regression exposition from North Carolina State, and we have a handout out of that. Chapter 6, there's also a posted handout. Columbia has a nice time to event data analysis. Here's from HSAUR, glioma, cancer survival. And then also from New Zealand, Mark Stevenson, introduction to survival analysis. This has the heroin data, as does Sophia from Berkeley's Handbook of Statistical Analysis using STATA, as we'll see. So Stevenson does very nice R. And then there's also a very nice, from France, set of slides, and they do the recidivism data also with some extra parametric models. And so chapter 11, survival analysis, this is heroin using Stata, Sophia Rabihaskis. She's up at Berkeley. She keeps Stata alive by producing advanced, many of the mixed effects model advanced routines. And Brostrom's book is also available. And Verbeke has lots of sets of slides on lots of good things. This survival analysis we'll use a good bit at the beginning. He has beautiful illustrations. And then main R package is Survival by Terry Thurnau, stat PhD Stanford in the 80s. He's been at Mayo Clinic. And then the task view, which we will go through, showing you what a big operation survival analysis is and some of the many packages that we'll sample from. Survival analysis, also called event history analysis in social science or reliability analysis in engineering, deals with time until occurrence of an event of interest. However, this failure may not be observed within the relevant time period, producing so-called censored observations. That is a new idea that we'll go through at the beginning of this lecture. Task view aims at presenting useful R packages for the analysis of time-to-event data. And it's got a lot. Okay, we have a set of class handouts where I pulled everything together, tried to summarize some of the readings and some of the notation. There are a couple of different notations, as we'll see. And then the main class data examples, the Miller leukemia data, which we'll use for Kaplan-Meier, two-sample comparison, and the heroin data. And you have some music from Lou Reed, if you like. And that's from the originally from the Handbook of Small Data Sets. And we have Stevenson and Sophia doing those. And I have properly formatted it and have an ASCII session, of course. And it comes originally from Capelhorn and Bell, Medical Journal of Australia. Recidivism data highlighted what we'll do next week. That's actually a designed experiment, figuring out whether people stay away from doing another crime after being out in parole, money working crime, Rossi and Burke. Okay, and then there's a bunch of other examples, but we see enough. We have review questions, and we have exercises. I'll add one or two to what you see here. We have recidivism data. Review question three gets a little bit ahead of us, but you can take a look at the recidivism data because we'll take that up next week. Okay, week five, more survival analysis is next week, and week nine, as you can see. Okay, one current event that is happening on Tuesday, today, when I'm doing this, October 27th, is just to show you there is interest, although sometimes it goes beyond exactly what we do in the course. And we have a fellow from Communication Psychology giving the Statistics Department seminar via virtually. You can see if you want that. If you happen to notice this, you might be interested. Modeling of both big and small longitudinal data. And he has a new word, at least it's not an acronym, screenomics. And it's basically keeping track of the behavior stream of use of your digital devices. And you can count how many times you do a certain action, how long you do it, what your transitions are. If you do one kind of thing, what's the probability of doing the next kind of thing? Those are all questions about, for an individual, tension between n equals one and n equals many. Our idea for trajectories and behavior streams is understand one and then accumulate over a bunch of ones, i.e. n equals many. And that seems to be a good approach to the behavior stream. These are going to be much richer data than we usually do, one measurement over time. We can see that's got plenty of complication, but the idea extends to far more possible activities and transitions between them. And we'll see that when we talk about behavior streams. So people care about these things. That's why I put in behavior streams here. Screenomics is your longitudinal record of what you're doing. Surveillance society, we know it all. Right. Okay, so here we're going to get started with Verbeke's slides. on page 7 of the PDF, easing you in. I want to do a number of examples and a number of pictures before we start doing the formal notation, the lambdas and the h's and the s's and all the derivatives thereof. Okay, getting started on page 7 of the PDF, we have the title slide for one of Verbeke's many talks, and he does a lovely job. So I use his production values rather than mine. And the note on the title is a bit whimsical, but serious. You need events in order to have any information in your data. So like the COVID vaccine trials, where you need people in the placebo to actually test positive in order to ascertain whether the vaccine is working, we need events, whether they be deaths or successes or whatever, and that runs the power of the study for doing an experimental comparison, for example. So that's his whimsical statement, or emergency room humor, as I think of it, which I enjoy. Okay, page 8 of the PDF starts with the survival curve. You want to know probability of surviving a specific amount of time. So survival is time to an event, but it can be how long will a light bulb survive, time until first tooth is affected with caries, time to first cavity, time a rat needs to exit a maze, i.e. learning time, time to mastery, or even age at first sexual experience, we'll see later on with high school or maybe junior high school data. I'll have to look, week 8. So time to event is what we're looking at. And you can think of it as just the mirror image of what we've been looking at. In the first weeks, we're looking at rate of improvement or rate of decline. You can think of how fast you're running a race versus how long it takes to finish. And maybe some people don't finish before dark and they call the race, and that's going to give us censoring. Okay, we know they lasted at least this long, but not anything more than that. That's where we're going with the survival data. So survival data is a new kind of data, even if we have complete records, and then we're going to have the added feature of censoring, especially right censoring, as we'll see. Okay. Cancer example, which we'll look at and we look at in the review questions. How likely it is a patient with colon cancer with vitamin C will survive 1 year, 2 years. That's the survival function or the curve, which is the core of things, or versions of that, such as the hazard function, which we'll come to. So the survival function, S, at a particular time, is the probability that you last at least till time T. Probability of surviving to time T. So at zero, everybody survived. At infinity, everybody fails. And it's the decreasing function. We'll see it's 1 minus the CDF. So it's between 0 and 1. It decreases as people have events. And those can be good events, like getting a PhD, as we'll see, or bad events, like succumbing. Okay, that's PDF page 9. And here are examples of survival curves. And you can, it's good to take a look at these because you get your intuitions. That is, if people in the red, it's people have a low hazard, instantaneous rate of an event. And therefore, events come later on, that is at high times to the right. Whereas in the blue, you have lots of people dropping or reaching the criteria early. This were learning data, then blue would be advantageous. Lots of people get to mastery quick. But if it's survival after cancer therapy, then you want it in the red. And you can think of hazard rates, which we'll come to as kind of the flip side. If you have a high hazard, a high probability of an event, you're going to have early events predominate. If you have a low hazard, late events predominate, and we'll see the exponential distribution has a flat hazard. So those are survival curves. You can see they're decreasing, but they may have different shapes. Gotta be monotone. Okay, so here is a survival curve well, your grandparents might have cared about. This is 1982 when I did this, and it is time to PhD. H&S wanted to know how long it takes students to actually get a PhD, get a good estimate of that for various kinds of departments. Humanities are going to be different than hard sciences, for example. They knew that. But and one of the policy decisions was whether to support a fifth year of PhD work. Would that get people done quickly? So that was, yeah, a pre-experimental idea. And here are durations. The difference between the dashed line and the solid line is the small number of people that fail their qualifying exams, i.e. get bounced after a year or two out of the program. Those used to be a bigger deal 40 years ago than they are now in PhD programs. And you can see it's decreasing. And between 5 and 6, between 4 and 6, you can see the biggest decrease. Not many people get it in 4. I did, but that's about right. And you can see group A is the scientists, psychology, chemistry, and physics. That was group A, and median survival time is about 5 years. That's 5 years of PhD, and 75% are there by 6 years. A little over 75% by 6 years. So, a quarter do it in less than 4.5. So those are ideas of what we're trying to estimate survival time. And if you look back to PDF page 11, the censoring is due. Let's say we collected these data in 1982. There were people that entered in 1972 who hadn't yet completed their PhDs in some departments. Would they ever do it? Well, probably odds are low, but we don't know. All we know is it took them at least 10 years, not maybe they finish after 12, after they do something else. You never know. Brian May from Queens, an old friend of mine, you know, left astrophysics back in the 70s, came back at age 60 and got his PhD. So we're always here for you. That's the message. So we have time to PhD as one example. Here's one of my favorites, and this shows us hazard functions. Alcohol and hemorrhagic stroke. So this is, you don't want strokes. You want your probability of getting a stroke at any time to be low. And if you look at it as a function of alcohol consumption, where I have it bottom of page 13, PDF page 13, and drink, 24 grams a day is about 2 drinks, which is about good, as we see. Inverse association with low to moderate alcohol consumption and risk of a total stroke. And so those with high levels of alcohol consumption are more prone to stroke, but also no alcohol might leave you prone to stroke relatively. So about 2.5 drinks a day is about equivalent to no drinks a day. Sweet spot might be 1 to 2. And that is Cox regression, as we'll learn how to do today and more in weeks 8 and 9, gave us this idea of this hazard function, which is the instantaneous probability of having an event. You want that to be low so you don't have strokes. And as that gets higher, you're more prone to strokes, and that'll influence the survival curve. That's where we're going with the basic vocabulary. And this is good news for a drink or two a day. Okay, alcohol and diet assessment, PDF page 14. I included the exact calibration of alcohol because it's good to see the data. Okay, hazards in real life, page 15. This is more relevant to me than you, but these are life tables and just get you idea into the idea of time to event. So a couple years ago, here was the idea of telling you at age 62, if you'd survived that long, you have about a 1 in 60 or 70 chance of dying in the next year. And your life expectancy is almost another 20 years. Females have lower death rates and higher expected life expectancy. And so if you're a woman who just turned 66, the odds of you dying next year, knowing probability is 0.012, should be probability, not odds, about 1 in 80. Shit. Okay, sorry, blunder number two, forgot to pull the landline out, as I usually do. So if you take a look at, we're on PDF page 15, regrouping. If you live to be 100, Social Security says you have a little more than a third of a chance of not making it another year, but your median life expectancy is 2.1. And then the economic idea, don't take benefits early if you're going to live to be 100. There's always an economic angle, but we're caring about the life table data. So here's the life table. It's conditional on you making it so far. What's the probability you make it another year, or what's your expected duration on the planet? So here we go with Verbeke's lovely charts, much better than I could draw. We have 8 subjects and we're looking at time to event data. And we could interpret the event as a good thing or a bad thing. I'll leave that out. But you can see for subject 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, we go up about 4.5 time units before we have an event. And then, of course, subject 1 has had his event. This is single event data. Subject 2 has an event much earlier at about 2.5. Subject 3 much later, about 6.5, I guess. Subject 8 is also later, etc. We see all the survival times or all the durations. And as long as we either treat it nonparametrically or model it by a density that is positively valued and probably long tail to the right, so it's just an exponential distribution, we have these waiting times or these survival times. And we know what to do with them. Okay, we could get a median survival. We get the percentiles, i.e. do a 5-num on the survival times. And we have a description of the data. And we could compare two groups on their survival. That is no censoring. We see every event. Some come early, some come late. Okay, so it's new kind of data, but there's that's the extent of the newness. Now, on page 17, we get the first depiction, and there are more complicated kinds of censoring. We'll talk about interval next week. Right censoring due to study end. That is, we may have started a study, like the time to PhD, and at some point we have to call it a day and collect data. If we do that here at the 5th tick, the end of the study, we're going to lose exact time of observations on subject 3 and subject 8, and all we will know is they lasted until the 5th time tick. So they will be censored observations. They'll be called 5+ often, and they will get in the survival object in R, they will get a 0 for censoring. That is, they will not be observed. We know something about them. They lasted at least till the end of the study, 5 ticks, but we don't have any information beyond that. Could have lasted a long time, could have lasted a short time. That's right censoring, and that's the most common kind of censoring. That's page 17 of the PDF. If this is new to you, it's good to pause and take a look at this, become familiar with it. That's the main feature of survival analysis. In addition to duration data, which we model differently than measured data, we also have censoring to deal with. And if there's a lot of censoring, that can cut down on the amount of information we have in the study. Right censoring could also be due to dropouts, and we hope that isn't due to the fact that they're getting a drug or being observed under a certain protocol, because that will mess us up. Censoring has to be independent of what's going on. But we just might move away, or people change for various reasons. So it could be due to dropout, but we hope that is that. Right censoring, either true event time or a lower bound if it is observed. That's what we talk about. And as I said, event time and censoring time are independent. So in schizophrenia studies, people drop out because the drug isn't working. That's not a good thing for our basic assumptions. So here are some counterexamples. You got to worry about that. The basic statistical procedures are based on the fact that how long you would have lasted and whether or not you're censored are independent. There's no real reason for it, except for the study ended, for example. Okay, so let's take a look at just what we do with survival data if we actually observed all events. That's his chapter one, survival analysis about censoring. As I said, I wanted to ease into this because it can get complicated pretty quick before we ease into some math. Okay, so survival times of cancer patients. This comes from the small data sets, famous small data sets book of hand, and it's on the Carnegie Mellon repository. Patients with advanced cancer of stomach, bronchus, colon, ovary, and breast. So we have five different groups. Got some treated and want to see how long they last. And we have five different kinds of cancers. We don't really have a treatment placebo. We just have a description of do things differ for different cancers. So it's just exemplar data. And here's our data. We have relatively few on ovary. We have a lot of colon. And you can see there's a wide variety of survivals on colon cancer. So for colon cancer, average day median is about 372. It's long-tailed, so the mean is much longer. That's typical of survival data. We have a few that survive a very long time, and you can see that. So median survival time, the time at which 50% have succumbed or had events, is a typical way things are measured. Also 25th and 75th percentiles are things people are interested in. So here's just a picture on PDF page 23, Verbeke did survival times, and this is typically how survival times look. With more data, it looks smoother, but that's a good thing to get used to. Positively valued, long-tailed, right. We could take logs to make it symmetric or just do things non-parametrically. That is, keep track of rank of your survival time. So the survival curve is just proportion without events at a certain time. So S of T in simple notation, you estimate the survival curve as number of subjects surviving over the total number of subjects. And that's the risk set. And we'll see that for censored data with Kaplan-Meier. So for when we only have six events, it's going to be very much a step function. And you see that in Kaplan-Meier also. So here's the survival curve. Here you have the calculations. You're just doing a simple fraction, PDF page 25. I'm trying to start out with simple examples so you get a feel for what's going on. Most of this is, of course, going to be done by algorithms that you don't do it by hand, but it's good to see it. Okay, and so here's your first survival curve, PDF page 26. You can see it's a step function down. But you can also get a guess at 50% survival at about 300 days, which is about what it was on our variant. Median was about 400 days, and you can see that at the 0.5 level of survival on the survival curve. Very rough, but gives you an idea. Those are the kinds of things you're going to be looking at with more richer data. Okay, so S of T is most simply non-parametrically estimated by a step function, steps at time when events are observed, step sign, right continuous, because at least surviving at least. Okay, then page 28 gets us to where I started writing things down, and we'll see them more nicely typeset in a moment, and all the referred, but I tried to make up some handouts that put everything on one page. Don't regard our first 30 minutes, our first section, our first 30 minutes as a rambling preamble as I worked up to getting to the technical details, which we'll start to go through in part B. So you've got an idea of what we're trying to do. Now we're going to do it.